You are now listening to the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Five, six, seven, eight. Holla, boys and girls, it's the BGN. Coming from the Marvel world to the DC friends. All the way from Hollywood to the PCN. She defends everyone from sleazy men. Won't apologize for spitting Shonda Rhimes. The space that we make is never colonized. Talking games and movies and actors.
Words? Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Yeah.
Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds. Better shake your booties for Black Girl Nerds.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie and I am your host along with Brian this week. Well, X-Men 97 has arrived, and if you have not seen the first two episodes of the series already, make sure you pause this podcast, watch those two episodes, and come back, because we are going to talk about all things X-Men 97. Now, this isn't a deep dive recap show. It's more of just a reflection of the moments that we enjoyed, and also us going back in time and enjoying the nostalgic moments of X-Men the Animated Series. So, if you are a fan of X-Men, if you're a fan of X-Men the Animated Series, most importantly, if you are excited for X-Men 97 and you've watched the episodes and want to hear more about it, then sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode of the Black Girl Nerds Podcast. My name is Jamie, and I am your host along with Ryan this week. We are excited to talk about all things X-Men 97. It is here as of this recording. You've already screened the first two episodes, and, you know, we wanted to give you guys enough time to watch, to absorb, to reflect, to converse amongst your comic book friends. Ryan, thanks so much for joining me on the show today and just talking about X-Men 97.
Thanks for having me. You know, all you had to say was X-Men and I was in. Like, it didn't really take a lot of convincing. It was X-Men, Marvel. So I was like, what am I going to do?
I know you love Marvel. You love all things Marvel, the good and the bad and the ugly. So I appreciate it. But there's nothing but good and amazing and awesomeness around X-Men and X-Men 97 specifically. And yeah. For those of us who are fans of X-Men the Animated Series back in the day, I real quick before we go into this recap, but for me, X-Men, the Animated Series, that was my gateway into comic books. I saw the animated series. I fell in love with it. Of course, I fell in love with Storm. That was the first time for me as a Black woman that I felt seeing her on the screen. And I just was like, you know what? I want to learn more about her. I want to learn more about this team. And I went to my comics bookstore. It was called Comics and Things in Virginia Beach. I would go to Comics and Things and like buy comic books of mostly X-Men at that time. And they even had, you know, fun fact for those of you that may not know, that might be of a newer generation, but back in the day when the X-Men, the animated series ran, they actually had a comic book run of the animated series. So if you wanted to read the animated series in book form, you could actually get the comics. So I collected those as well as the other X-Men books. So very excited to talk about it. As you can tell, I'm a geek for all things X-Men. What about you, Ryan? How did you get introduced to X-Men the Animated Series?
Yeah, mine, I've always talked about how just like the anything film-wise Marvel always pulled me in. And so when I first started to get an interest in Marvel, it was the X-Men films. And even though it's always been a great debate how Halle Berry didn't have enough lines, just seeing her in these X-Men film really pulled me in. Like, that made me a Marvel fan, because I just thought it was so badass for her to be able to control the weather. Like, a Black woman to be able to control the weather, to me, just screamed like being a badass. And I was just hooked ever since. I just wanted to know, like, I wanted to take it all the way to Last Stand. You know, we got these other X-Men movies that they came out with. So I got my opinions on that. I'm a little skeptical. Right. But I love that we get to take it back to the 90s with this. It is so cool. And I know we're going to get into it, but I love that we get to open up with Storm. So it's so cool to go back to the 90s on this.
Yeah, I mean you're 100% right. The films, you know, unfortunately there's a bit of a checkered past with how Storm has
Right.
been represented, but that's what we have, the animated series, and now X-Men 97 to look forward to is the correct depiction of Storm. And one of the things that is a little different with Storm in X-Men 97 is she's Mohawk Storm, which I
Yeah, she
really like.
is.
Yeah, I that is a little different because the animated series, you know, we saw the long
Yeah.
silvery hair, and that was a beautiful look, beautiful aesthetic, but I've always loved Mohawk Storm. So awesome that they started off with her having this look in the first season.
Yeah, I love the long, like the ponytail in the back, or the long that it goes long in the back. So it's kind of giving us the best of both worlds, where it's not just a straight up mohawk. Because some people always have the criticism of her wearing the mohawk from the films and stuff, because you know she already has like that. It's like you don't have the lines, and then it makes her like this harder figure that's like unapproachable whenever you put the mohawk and tutu together. So I like how they're changing that up for us to kind of give us that two view, where it's like, okay, we could give you a little long in the back, but we're gonna keep like the mohawk going because she is, you know, still got that sharpness and that spunk to her. And we know how our, like, as Black women, our hair always, you know, kind of reflects our attitude and what we bring to it. So it was definitely dope to see her bust out in that. And the uniform, as always, you gotta love that. You gotta love the all white.
You gotta love the uniform and you've gotta love the voice. So some actors from the old series is now part of X-Men 97. They've also brought in some new actors. I want to really quickly say I had the opportunity to interview Brad Winterbaum, who's the head of Marvel Studios Animation and also the executive producer on this series. And one of the questions I asked him is, why didn't you bring all of the OG actors from the first one? And I forgot, and it, you know, it's a shame that I didn't think about this before prepping for the interview, but some of the actors are no longer with us. So, and he had mentioned that in our interview, so that's also why. And then also that actors' voices change over time. But then going back to Storm, Allison Seeley Smith is actually the original voice of Storm from the animated series and is now in X-Men 97. And I love that because it's like Storm never changed.
I
You
love
know,
it. I love it.
yeah. Go ahead, Ryan. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. No, I was just echoing what you said. I absolutely love that they bring some of the OGs back. Like you said, you know, it's been a minute, so time gets us, our voices change. But I just want to point out now, Allison is still kicking it good with the voice, and she still got it. I'm just
She
saying,
sounds
we always say black don't
the
crack. I mean, she's still sounding the same though. I'm just
Black
saying.
don't black voices don't crack.
Black voices don't crack.
She
I just
sounds
want to put that out there. I just want to put that out there.
I do want to put that out there because she sounds exactly the same. Like when we hear in episode one, Storm is already dramatic when she first shows up in the scene. She's like, "I am Storm, mistress of the elements," and it's like, "Oh my gosh, I remember."
Yeah.
But then, you know, there are actors whose voices have changed, and I didn't even know that they were the original. I didn't even know they were the original actors until someone brought it up to me because I was a little critical of the voice of Rogue. I had put this on my Facebook. Because the voice of Rogue sounded really different to me, and it's actually the same
Oh, yeah, it
actress.
is. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
Yeah,
that's.
so I did not know that because, you know, her voice is a little different. And as Brad mentioned in this interview, you know, over time people's voices change and stuff with age. So Rogue does sound slightly different from the Rogue that I remember, but I still love Rogue. She's awesome. I still love her little, you know, roguisms, her little, you know, southern, I don't know, southern sayings or what have you. But you know, you got to keep that cat in the bag kind of thing. So, we love Rogue here, but yeah, Storm is like, it's like she hasn't changed. Like she has not left the 90s.
Yeah, and I love how they always give her like the big interest, the big save, like she busts in with Bishop in the beginning, just to kind of give us like that, you know, she's gonna give you an option. She'll give you an option to cooperate and do what she tell you to do, but if not, you already know what's coming. So I love that they still keep that, they keep that going like right off the bat. So yes, it's always a good time to see Storm.
And I'm glad you brought up Bishop because Bishop is a important and pivotal character that I remember from the animated series. And going back to speaking with Brad Winderbaum, I asked about, Bishop and the change there. But yeah, Bishop in the original series, he really doesn't show up until later on. And now in X-Men 97, he's got his own title card and intro, and he's along with the rest of the team as a prominent character. And Brad was saying how, Bishop has always been a really significant character for the X-Men. But now we see him, right there with them at the beginning of the intro. And I just love that he's got his own, little title card. So I just miss the mullet. That's all.
It's very Isaac Robinson Smith does the voice on that. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that actor or not. But yeah, it's so, I think it's just gonna be so interesting. And I love that he has that aspect of time traveling that they always keep referring to. And you just feel like he's on a clock. He's like, hurry up, let's get this over, the bad guy of the week. Go ahead and give me my little power boost so I can get this over with. You always just feel like he's trying to count down the clock. So it's gonna be interesting to see how his character continues to develop.
Indeed. So yeah, what did you think about this first episode? So, the first episode picks up from where the last episode of the final season of X-Men the Animated Series left off. We learn that, Professor Charles Xavier is not with us. He's, now deceased, which I have some theories that that's not really the case, that he's alive somewhere
Ooh, great,
being
great. Love the
held.
theories.
Yeah, being held somewhere captive, and he will show up later on in the series. But the Sentinels, they're still a threat. And I think what was cool for me was it was very nostalgic because the very first episode of the animated series, The Night of the Sentinels, was just about that, how they were just like a huge threat to the mutants, and how obviously there is this agenda to make sure that humans and mutants don't coexist. So to see them sort of, be at the forefront of this very first episode just felt like a throwback to me to the animated series. What did you think?
I love that you brought that topic up of just feeling like the kind of like the age old thing with the mutants. What we love so much about them is that there's always this fight, right, of being different and just wanting to be left alone. Like they want to help humans, they just want to be left alone, right? But we know it's always a struggle when somebody doesn't understand how you look. They don't understand your makeup, your culture, right? They always gonna try to push back. So I think that's what draws a lot of people in to the X-Men. And I love how this first episode really pulls us in. When you get the this energy of just them, them trying to fight, trying to figure out what's going on. They're sad. Professor X being gone. I want to hear Jamie's theories because my thing is, I feel like nobody leaves this group of mutants better than him. I feel like everybody tries. We see Cyclops trying his hand at it, but they just don't. I don't know what it is. They just don't have that. It's like they're missing a quality or something that comes along with trying to run the team. Because Cyclops is trying, but he's always like held back by like this burden. I always feel like he's carrying something else where he can't fully be there and be present with everybody. And we know his whole thing with Wolverine going down. So I always feel like it's a struggle for him. So yeah, I love like just overall how this episode was just really harping on the fact of, we have to deal with, we lost our leader. We have to deal with the fact that nobody understands that we just want to help. We just want to be left alone. We're not trying to cause you any harm. But the fact that they're different is always that struggle, and that they really dive into that fight in the beginning of this episode, in the first episode, is really cool.
Yeah, the action starts right away, which is definitely the legacy of the animated series that I've always loved. But then the drama is there too. Like X-Men, the animated series was always a soap opera. Like, while my mom was watching daytime soaps, I was watching X-Men, the animated series on Saturday morning with my Saturday morning cartoons on Fox. That was like my soap opera, because yeah, we still have the drama that is this love triangle between Wolverine, Cyclops, and Jean Grey. And I do want to speak to Gambit's first appearance in this episode because anybody that knows me personally, knows that I stand for Gambit. Like, he was my first cartoon crush. And like,
Oh.
I really, yeah, like, I really fell hard for him. And shout out to Chris Potter, who was the original voice of Gambit, who, by the way, is actually going to be in this series as another character. But the new actor for Gambit, AJ LoCascio, I think his name is, he did a great job. Like, he sounds just like Chris Potter did back in the day. So I love it. I love the Cajun accent. It's on point. I love the midriff top that he was wearing. I was like, okay, Gambit is giving me some 80s vibes going on here. So yeah, you know, the look of Gambit, the look of all of these X-Men are relatively the same from the 90s series. And also, I like that the animation was pretty much consistent with the 90s style animation. They didn't try to CGI it up and AI it up with, you know, the new technology that we have. Like, keep it to what we know best, you know, the inks and pencils and all of that. So I love what the animation looks like and the aesthetic that they gave it for X-Men 97.
Yeah, you don't realize how much you miss that stuff when we have all the flash and the 4K and the blah 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 and the live action does this. Like, you don't realize how much you miss just that classic 2D animation where it's like you're following the story. You know, the action scenes pack a punch, but it's not like, you know, it doesn't really pull you out of it because you're still following the storyline. So it's so cool. And I love like the ending of the episodes where it kind of looks like you're choosing a character on a video game. Like if you were
Yes.
like in an old school or arcade, like moving it over, trying to pick a character. I love how they just bring all that back to you just chilling like in the 90s with cartoons. It's so cool.
Yeah, and that end title card is exactly the way it looked like on the animated series. So the consistency is just top-notch. I'm loving it. We do discover one of our mutants though is pregnant, Jean Grey,
I
which
know.
I'm like, okay, she's got a bun in the oven in this episode. So, yeah, what did you think about that when you saw a like a 9-month pregnant Jean Grey?
Man, I didn't even know what I was very surprised we started out with that, but then again, it doesn't surprise me. It also doesn't surprise me that we keep going back to how stressed Wolverine is. That, you know, this girl that he loves and like idolizes is always with Scott, always with Cyclops. And I'm like, are we ever gonna like, I mean, you know, you have to stay true to the comics. It's the history of their whole story. But I'm like, man, I feel for him. Like every time he's like watching their like fairy tale romance unfold. And, you know, he's just like the angry guy in the corner having to watch this. But yeah, and you know, in the and it brought in that interesting trope of like, okay, you want Jean and Scott to be happy. They have this new baby, and they're like, listen, we're gonna leave the X-Men, okay? We want this happy life. We've saved the world enough. We want to leave. And we know if you watch enough superhero movies and you know this world, it never happens like that. Like you're like, why do we always start like that, but it never happens like that because they have too much. I don't know if it's because the inner hero they have. I don't know if it's because they're tied to a whole bunch of people that got other baggage, but they can never walk away, which I thought was such an interesting, you know, concept just to start us off with. Like there's just so much change going on with the X-Men and this family that they've kept knit, tight knit. And then they're going around trying to hide it at first. Like nobody else on the team knows that they like as soon as they have this baby or when they have the baby, they want to leave the team. They want to, you know, be able to enjoy their family and not have to fight. So it was such a interesting dynamic in this episode of watching people kind of skate around. Like, are they going to tell us? We already know. Like, are you going to come true with it? Morph was having himself a good time, you know, just cracking jokes and everything and playing with. I remember one time he morphs into Jean in a nightclub scene to mess with Wolverine. Like, he's having himself a good time because he knows it's pulling on everybody, this factor of like them leaving and the family won't be complete. And he's of that mindset, they're never gonna leave. He's always of that mindset, like his family's coming back, they're never gonna leave. So I think that's a cool addition to his character. But yeah, it's I don't know. I'm like, do you ever think we're gonna get away from that Wolverine Jean like pull, like love story? You think he's always gonna be there to pull her back?
Well, there's a great, you know, shameless plug. There's a great article on Black Girl Nerds about the many love interests of Wolverine, and
Ooh, love it.
he's He's had some women in his day. Jean Grey is one of them. But I think that eventually he's going to move on from Jean Grey. I think that they decided to keep that whole love triangle thing intact because it does help elevate the drama of the show a little bit. And it is what we kind of remember best from the 90s series is like Wolverine always having like a salty attitude towards Cyclops because, you know, he's low key jealous or maybe high key jealous of their relationship. And now that she's pregnant with Scott's child, like that could really never happen now. So he sees the end of what he was kind of hoping to have with Jean. But hopefully they'll bring in, because I think from the animated series we did see some other love interests. And I haven't been able to go into the animated series to do a refresh from like back when I watched it. So a lot of what I'm talking about, by the way, is like my memories from like decades ago when I saw it, because I have not screened it recently. But yeah, I would hope that, you know, Wolverine is going to be able to move on from Jean Grey because
We're gonna have to try to go back and find see how many other ladies the Wolverine have, because he looking real sad in this first episode.
He's looking real sad, but also I love the fact that we still have the same voice actor for Wolverine. He sounds great. Like, you know, the Logan that I remember is pretty consistent. And then you mentioned morph and have how he has that conversation with Wolverine and he morphs as Jean Grey and she's like, yeah, I had the perfect life with the most boring husband. And I'm like, oh my gosh, morph, you are terrible.
Yeah, he
Yeah,
has a
I
good
love
time. He
Morph.
definitely has a good time. Yeah.
What do you think of let me ask you this question. What do you think of Morph? Because you know, again, shameless plug, Black Girl Nerds. We recently did an article about Morph, and he's been identified as non-binary. And apparently some people are upset about that. I don't know why. He's a shapeshifter. Why would you be mad at that? But whatever. Not really talking about that topic, but what do you think about Morph in general? Because I do remember from even back in the day, fans really didn't, you know, take a liking to him as much as they did the other X-Men. And my theory and my guess is Morph was new. Morph was, I think, even designed for the animated series because he never had his own comic book. So he didn't have the history of all of these other X-Men. So yeah, what are your thoughts on Morph, and are you aware of like the division of fans towards that character?
Well, I wasn't aware of the division. I didn't actually know of Morph either, which so I thought this was a cool addition for me to kind of learn and dive into him. It was interesting because he was so quirky and different. And I think he keeps the X-Men on their toes. I don't think you can
Yes.
always be like all humdrum and like, oh, we're gonna follow the rules, da, 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 da. I mean, they're in high stakes situations all the time. They need a little bit of comic relief. I mean, maybe his jokes could be at the wrong time when it's real dangerous, but they need somebody. They need somebody to kind of even it out. I think that is the whole, coolness about the X-Men. Everybody can identify, everybody can find something, with their personalities that fits you, right? Like you're not always gonna fit in the group. You may have a sense of humor that nobody else understands, but they still treat him like he's part of the team. They need him to save the day. He can, I mean, that shapeshifting comes in handy. Well, you need somebody to pretend to be somebody else, a couple of these state officials, swap them out. That's what I'm just saying. So that comes in handy, like being able to shape shift. So I think it's a great idea. I think it's a wonderful character. People are always gonna fight change. That's all we always say, like in the nerd supernatural world, people always just got something to fight against when it's something different. But yeah, I really enjoyed Morph. I think it was different because you gotta have your classics, gotta have your classic characters. But I love that it was something different that they were like, okay, we're gonna put him on the forefront. He's gonna be part of the main crew here.
And there's a scene where, you know, they're in their aircraft and they go and they have to go out and fight. And we see Morph, and he actually morphs into another X-Man by the name of Archangel. Did you catch that?
I did. I caught a little bit. I caught it, but I didn't know what it was going into. Like, what did you find out? Like, what are the
Well,
details on that one?
he just randomly morphed into Archangel. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. I don't I don't know if they're giving us some hints there,
Oh,
with his
interesting, interesting.
character coming into the fold. Because I bring that up, because talking to Brad again, check out our I'm a shameless plugger. Check out our YouTube interview with Brad Winderbaum, because he kind of gave us an exclusive saying that there will be more X teams that will show up in
Yay.
this series. And Archangel was a member of X Factor from back in the day. And we'll talk a little bit more as we progress throughout talking about this episode and then the next episode. But
By the way, you should always plug Brad. I mean, how could you not?
yeah, well, I'm plugging Brad, I'm plugging Black Girl
Go
Nerds, our exclusive interview with him where he tells us more
and check
X
it out.
team. Yeah, because I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see, X Force come into play, X Factor come to play, and I mentioned in our interview, I want to see Excalibur, because
Hey, there you
that
go.
was my team from back in the day, and I want that to happen. But going back to this episode one, because I don't want to go too far with that conversation, because we'll get back to that a little bit. But we do see another character by the name of Roberto de Casta. And he befriends Jubilee. Well, we see him in a situation where he's actually being hunted by the Sentinels, but then he befriends Jubilee later on. So, what did you think about Roberto? Because we eventually, I guess we could say it, he becomes a mutant X-Men character that we all come to know and love.
Yeah, Roberto, I like him. I like him. I like he's very suave, you know. He's very, innocent right now. He's just kind of, I'm gonna hide from the danger. He's, flirting with Jubilee. I see you trying to flirt, get your flirt on. I love the little dancing club scene, where they got the energy. I think they call them like plasmoids, like floating around them and everything, which I thought was cool.
Oh yeah, the little light sticks, the glow sticks he
They had that was really cool to kind of see them have a lot of fun. 'Cause yeah, Jubilee is just fun, right? And so I love
Yeah.
them giving somebody that she can flirt with, have some fun with a little bit, 'cause she's always going to keep it real. So I just love to see him have to kind of squirm a little bit, 'cause he's definitely that character that's going to try to, duck and hide if he can. As we're finding out as he goes through the episodes, if he doesn't have to be in the mess, he ain't trying to be in the mess. So I
Yeah.
like that she challenges him and keep it real spicy and flirty. So I like it.
And I love the fact that you mentioned like Jubilee is someone who brings a little light and levity into this show. Because even going back to the animated series, I forgot what the name of the episode was. Because again, I'm going off of a memory from over a decade ago. But it was the episode where we saw Jubilee, Rogue, and Storm, and they're in a shopping mall and they just go shopping as girls.
Oh
And
yeah,
I
that was
just,
a good one.
I
I do remember
love
that
that.
scene.
I love that. So, that's what you get in Jubilee. You just get innocence. You just get, this teenager who just really wants to have fun. And she doesn't even see and understand the weight of all of this. But I just appreciate that they have that kind of character in this show. And we're also kind of seeing that through Roberto's character. So, yeah,
His
I
solar
love it.
energy is amazing. I love that when they get to kind of we could get to see it at the end. He's kind of hiding it because he's like I say, he don't want any trouble. He knows they're out looking for mutants, so he's like, I'm not gonna really show you what I can do yet. So I like that
Yep.
they kind of sneak it in towards the end of it. So yeah, it's really cool. It's gonna be interesting to see how his unfolds because he's like giving that trust fund kid air, and everybody's kind of looking at him like. Especially somebody like Wolverine is like, all right, we'll save the kid because what other choice do we got? We got to save people, but he's here. So it's going to be interesting seeing his dynamic, with the rest of the team and see how he fits in and what he can contribute because they're all looking for, I
Yep.
mean, you're part of this family, but at the same time, they look for what you can contribute, right? Like everybody has a certain skill factor, a certain way that they add on to the team. So it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be interesting. I'm here for the evolution of Sunspot, who Roberto da Costa will be unveiled as later on. So we see in episode one as well a character Gyrick who gets interrogated by the team. First, Cyclops wants to ask him some questions about the Sentinel program and about Trask. And Gyrick is not having it. He's not wanting to give any information. And I just bring up Gyrick because of his philosophies and his beliefs about the division of mutants and humans, and how he feels that mutants are inferior to humans, and how he just is not tolerant of them. And like, he sounds very relevant to a lot of Trump supporters today.
Yeah, it's amazing these concepts they're throwing out, but giving it to us in a superhero world. Yeah, it's amazing.
And I mean, I'm not trying to polarize Trump supporters. I'm just saying, like, a lot of the rhetoric that comes out of like a lot of right-wing talking points, and Trump specifically, like when it comes to immigrants, was very similar to how Gyrick's views are about mutants. So one of the really important, and the centerpiece of this show is about the marginalization of a community. And I think that's why a lot of us people of color, people in other marginalized communities, really was drawn to the X-Men, because we felt like X-Men. We felt like we were mutants the way we were treated. So, not to get too serious, but like, I really like the parallels that are, I should say, I find that the parallels there with Gyrick's character and his rhetoric towards mutants to be very similar to the rhetoric we hear today from Trump.
And I was, I'll go ahead, Jamie. You want to
No,
add to that?
I'm
Go
done.
ahead. Oh, I was just gonna say, I totally agree with you, because you don't, like you say, you don't want to take it too serious, because it's an entertainment kind of, platform that they handed us to it, but it's important. Like it comes into your mind, because I know one of the last scenes or kind of efforts they have, Trasic, who, both him and Garrick are kind of working together, as like the big bad of this episode, the big villains of this episode. And he has some of the same philosophy. He was like, as he's getting carried away after they defeat him, he's like, you have no idea, paraphrasing here, you have no idea what it feels like, to basically feel like they can't defend themselves against the mutants, like, against the X-Men. Like, no matter what they do, it seems like their power as humans is not good enough to stop them. Instead of that attitude of like, they're trying to save me, let me figure out how to understand them. They're more of like, you guys are overpowering us. There's no we can stop you. It's just doom and gloom. It's the end of it. And you have that sentiment instead of doing, the research, finding out, not leaning one way or the other, like actually figuring out how somebody truly feels, not forcing your opinions on other people. Your thoughts is another big thing that I think mutants always, or the X-Men in general, just always point out as a theme of like just trying to understand somebody and not trying to force your view just because you have this, I don't know, totalitarian view, because you don't think it's a democracy kind of look, trying to force your thing, your views on somebody else. I think it's always a key to how the X-Men world works, where it's just like, let me just hear my side out. You stay on your side, I stay on my side. Let me just hear like what the views are. So I think it's very interesting how to end it.
Yeah, and I mean, this show is just, I feel like we need to watch a show like this today. Like, I'm so glad that they brought back X-Men, because it a lot of the philosophies and the talking points from what Trask Industries and what Gyrick and all of the folks in his camp believe in are a lot of the things that we hear on the news now, and even like what's happening overseas at, different wars that are taking place. So yeah, it's relevant. It's not just a
Yeah,
cartoon.
100%. Yeah, it's definitely relevant. 100%.
So as we wrap up like episode one, there is a very important, very notable character that shows up at the end. And I love the way each of these episodes, as we'll talk about it, has these really great climax, or what's the proper word? Oh gosh, I can't even
Oh,
remember
cliff,
what.
like a cliffhanger or something like that.
Cliffhanger. Thank you. Yes. Like really great cliffhangers at the end of the episode, because we see entering in Magneto last scene, and I'm like, okay, all right, what's about to go down? And then, he's has Professor Xavier's last will and testament, and he's like, basically Charles left everything to me. So, I'm running the X-Men. I own the mansion. Like it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I don't trust Magneto. I'm trying to get there. I just can't. It's too many iterations of him where I just never trust it, because I feel like he always tries to get to the aspect of like, okay, he's trying to be good, he's trying to do something decent. But my first thought, like I saw the will in their hand, and I'm like, okay, what did he forge? What did he mess up? But he's gonna pretend like Professor X said, you can take over this school for me, you're in charge. I'm always like second guessing Magneto's you know, drive and what his focus is and what he wants to do, which I guess makes him such an intriguing character. So you got to have a Magneto with the X-Men. So it's gonna be interesting.
And that, and I mean, I don't have a specific theory, but I do have a theory that I think that Charles Xavier is still alive. That's the theory. But
Yeah.
it could also be that Magneto might have him being held somewhere in space, or
Yep.
some sort of other dimension. And that this whole last will and testament that Charles allegedly prepared for him is something that he conjured up and is just using as a ruse for the X-Men. So, very interesting the way that panned out. I mean, at the end of the day, Magneto, I have a love and hate relationship with him, because,
Yeah.
as we all know, like, everybody's always made these comparisons, the MLK and Malcolm X philosophies, and that's the Charles
Yeah.
Xavier and Magneto. Like, at the end of the day, Magneto isn't really a terrible guy. He's more of an anti-hero. He just goes about things in a very aggressive and super ambitious way. That's not the way that Charles, as well as, like, generally, you should really go about it. Like, he doesn't
Right.
think of peaceful ways to do it. It's like a by all means necessary, kind of philosophy. So, we'll see how things play out, but it was a little sus about him having ownership over everything. And him now, I guess, essentially being the de facto leader of the
Yeah,
X-Men.
yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out. Any other last thoughts or opinions on episode one?
I was having some thoughts on Magneto's hair. I don't know if I like the long or the short look. You know, I wasn't sure. I don't know what you thought about that. I wasn't sure which look I like better. I think the long hair kind of threw me off a little bit, where I might have trusted him a little bit more, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, I will add this observation. Well, that goes into episode two. So let me put a pin in that one for
Okay.
episode two. We recap that. But yeah, I liked the hair. I'm trying to think. It didn't look too different from the original series, from what I can
Okay, cool.
recall.
Okay.
My mind is still a little fuzzy. But overall, Magneto is still consistently Magneto. One last opinion, though, before we move on to episode two, is I still love that they are holding on to the relationship and the sort of the back and forth flirting that we see with Rogue and Gambit. Because out of all the X-Men
Yeah,
couples,
yeah.
Rogue and Gambit are my favorite. I love Rogue and Gambit together.
Yeah, so cute.
And I always feel a little sad for Rogue when she sees those moments of people being intimate and, holding hands and kissing, and she's not really able to have that kind of relationship with Gambit. But Gambit's still loyal, like, he's still there and, flirting, and still he still loves Rogue. So yeah, I was glad to see that moment between them where they, like, held hands even though they had gloves. So that was cool. Because for those that don't know, which I'm sure you guys know, that Rogue cannot physically touch a person without them having their strength absorbed. So, I mean, she could literally touch a person and they'll faint or something. So yeah, Gambit and her could never touch, which is
Listen,
sad.
Gambit is a real one. He's hanging in. He's like,
He's
I'm still gonna
hanging
be here for my girl. I'm gonna shoot my shot every time. I'm ready to flirt it up when we're not in danger. So I appreciate him.
I'm just saying, gambling. I'm single. I'm single,
Listen,
Gambit.
listen. Jamie's giving you a shout out, Gambit. B, I'm just saying, you know, add her
I
in. You know, I don't know how you're feeling about, you know, as the season goes, but I'm just telling you.
he I I'm telling you, Gambit, just he does things. He makes me feel things. Okay.
Shout out to Gambit.
Shout out to get to Remy LeBeau. Shout
Yeah,
out.
there you go. There you go, really.
So, okay, episode two. So we end on that cliffhanger of Magneto saying, "Look, I'm in charge.
Yep.
Charles has left me in charge." And now we learn some more information about Magneto, and he actually has a run-in with a group of mutants, which I remember from the animated series, the Morlocks. Did you remember that moment in episode two where, we see the Morlocks? Callisto is there. Oh gosh, I forgot the little green guy's name, but I just
Oh,
love the
yeah, I
Morlocks.
don't remember. Yeah, it was slowly coming. I was like, what feels familiar about this? But I couldn't play. I'm glad you're putting all the pieces together. I was like, something feels
Yeah.
familiar about it.
And I'm jumping around because, this happens a little bit later in the episode, but I just loved seeing that because from the animated series, that little storyline about the Morlocks was one of my favorite storylines. So yeah, I loved seeing them back in action and Magneto, letting them know that, look, I got you. You ain't got to worry about anything. I'm gonna protect you. Like he's a good road dog for the mutants. Like that's the aspect of Magneto, of Eric that I do like, is like he wants to protect his brotherhood.
Yeah, and he never likes that feeling of you just feeling like less than, right? Like I have to say I love that about him. He's always gonna try to be like if if he see you backed up in a corner, he's never gonna let you fully get taken advantage of. He's always got a mutant's back. He's ready to go to bat for you. If he sees you trying to fight, trying to defend yourself, he's like, I'm not gonna let you go. I got you. I got you. Now, if you join his crew, your motives might have to be a little questionable, but he's got your back. When you start off, like he's never gonna let you completely fall. Like he's got a mutant brother's back. Like he's gonna be there. He's
He's gonna
got
be
you to help
there.
you out. So yeah.
And the series executive producers, the creators, they really gave us a huge hint about his presence in episode two because Magneto in the opening titles, he has his own title card. So we went from, just seeing the X-Men with the original OG X-Men, and then Bishop being added in episode one, but now in episode two, we see Magneto. So that tells us that he's got a pretty big presence. He's now leading the X-Men at this point. And I thought that was very interesting to see him, in the opening scene.
Yeah, with him saving the firefighter and the kid on the roller coaster, I thought that was interesting because I don't know why I totally forgot. He was joining up with the ranks because I thought it was gonna be one of the other X-Men. And then I was like, oh, I forgot Magneto's, he's trying on his good guy routine, which I did air quotes at the time because like I said, every time I see Magneto, he's not totally a villain, but some of the times he has like his other motives, the reasons he does things. So you're still a little bit on edge and I like how you go from this opening scene to the X-Men are also feeling like the viewers, right? Like they're also like, okay, what do you want? What are your intentions? You think just because you came in here, you did da 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 da, you're clear of all the other bad stuff you've done. You think you're really gonna lead us? You really think you deserve to lead us? So I like how they have all the questions that we have, which is really interesting.
Exactly. So I mentioned earlier about Rogue, and I wanted to bring in my thinking into what happens here in episode two. So, we find out in a scene between both Rogue and Magneto that they had some history. A little something going on between the two of them. So I thought that that was cool to see that being introduced into, again, X-Men is all about the drama. So, that's gonna prove to be a little bit of a awkward situation for Rogue as she's with Gambit, and now Magneto, obviously he still has feelings, it sounds like, with Rogue. So I just found that to be very interesting and very compelling. And in the comic book, from what I understand, Magneto and Rogue, they actually had a kid together. By the name of Magnus. So this is all canon, y'all. And there was some contention with her and Gambit as a result of her relationship with Magneto. So we'll see if they stick with the comic run or if they go into a different direction, but I'm hoping not because I love Rogue and I don't want her hooking up with Magneto, but yeah, just as a side piece of information, they do have a relationship and a kid together in the comics.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I thought that was an interesting twist, and to see like Gambit's reaction as this kind of unfolds. And Magneto, you know, he's like a OG player, right? Like he's gonna suss out like the power, right? Like he's not afraid to, like, even though, you know, most people might back away from Rogue because, you know, her powers and what she possesses, and you know, she can kind of pull you in. He's like, nah, I'm feeling the power. I need to level up. I want to be close to this power. So I think that kind of draw and that kind of pull, that he's fearless, and I think that kind of pulls her in, you know, even though, like I said, don't count out my boy Gambit, because he's still been hanging in, he's still been there. But I think that, like, that bad boy dangerous side has got her leaning, got her leaning a little bit into Magneto. And you know that in the kid, I didn't know about the kid. So that's interesting to see if, like, as this continues to go on, that's something that's, you know, put in or played up more. So it'll be interesting.
It's going to be very interesting. And speaking of a kid, we witnessed the birth of Jean Grey and Scott Summers' kid in this episode. She's been pregnant all throughout episode one, and she gives birth. And I found it really funny that when she's going into labor, Wolverine is the one that's there to have to deal with
Oh my
the
gosh.
stress of getting
Yeah.
a woman in labor to the hospital. And he's like, oh. But it is interesting that they chose to have Wolverine be the one that helped her get to the delivery room, as opposed to like Cyclops being there or any other X-Man being there. So again, they want to keep that tension going because Wolverine has not lost feelings for Jean Grey, even at this stage of her relationship with Scott. So yeah, what did you think about her giving birth and like that whole scene and how that
Yeah,
unfolded?
I felt for Wolverine. I like how they open the scene when she first starts having contractions or her water breaks, and he thinks that she's yelling like somebody's coming through the door or something, and he's about to, like, he pulls out the claws. He thinks something else is happening. He's like, oh. And I totally did not think he was going to handle it. I mean, you know, he still did his Wolverine thing where he was trying to run people down in the street, but I didn't think he was going to handle it enough to, like, be able to put her in a car and drive to the hospital. Like, I thought he was going to do more panicking. So it was interesting to kind of see him be able to handle this and take her. Like you said, it's a very interesting dynamic. Like, this is this picture perfect world this girl that he's obsessed with has with Scott, and he's got to take her to the hospital, you know, to deliver the baby, because obviously he's not a bad guy. He's not gonna just let her sit there. But it's just interesting to have to see that he was the one she had to lean on, you know, to get that done. But and you know, and also on the with dealing with like the birth and everything, to bring our girl Rogue back again. I thought it was interesting how they tackle the idea of, you know, going to the hospital and being turned down. I thought that was interesting the way they bring that in, because, you know, based on your funds, your background, you know, I always think it's just ludicrous, my own personal views, to turn down somebody that needs help when you come to a hospital, you know,
Yeah,
no matter what.
facts.
Like, just on just simple, basic humanity, I just feel like it's a horrible thing. And you know, they're like, oh, well, you're a mutant and blah, 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 blah. If she has the baby, you're gonna do this. You know, so I thought it was really cool to get to see Rogue to use her powers in that way, to kind of take that from the doctor and be able to kind of transfer his knowledge in order to deliver the baby, which I thought was really cool use of her powers, and to be able to see her, you know, other than just her like always having to hold back and just doing like the Southern charm and kind of hanging out in the back, because like you don't always want her, you know, touching things. You never know what's gonna happen. But I like how in this case it really worked out to their benefit. And then, you know, like I said, it's bringing you back to another real world discussion. They don't stay in it long, but it's another thing of like that help holding you back from healthcare, right? Like, she's needing to deliver this baby. It's like, what are you talking about right now? What's the issue? So I thought that was very interesting for them to bring that in.
I think that is, again, like this show definitely shows a lot of parallels between what is happening in our society
Yeah.
today, versus what is happening in this fictional comic book world. And yeah, like that's a real thing. And, socialized healthcare should be a thing in our country. We shouldn't have to pay for healthcare.
Yeah.
So like all of those elements ring true, and I just love how real this show is. And I think that's why this is a show that's resonated with so many people, and even us as like adults that is watching this cartoon, and like we're completely geeked out for it because I don't know, X-Men never felt like a cartoon. It never felt like it was like for a younger demographic. It just felt like it was just a real show, and it had a lot of action, but it had these really cool dramatic elements. And then they dealt with social issues. And that's just something I would see like in a regular TV show, whether it be Walking Dead or Game of Thrones, or you know what I'm saying? Like all of those kind of things. So one of the things I wanted to add to going back to Rogue and Gambit and Magneto, because that's another love triangle situation that we're going to deal with. So Magneto, he's immune to Rogue's power, which allows her to touch him, which is why in the comics they were able to have a baby. But we do discover in this episode that there's a scene where Rogue and Magneto, they hold hands, and it's a pretty intimate moment between the two of them. And then Gambit is like right outside of the office. It's Charles Xavier's office where they're in, and he's right outside the office, and he eavesdrops and hears them, and he's not happy. So now we've got that drama to deal with in upcoming episodes of Gambit feeling some type of way because Magneto has kind of come in to wreak havoc on their relationship. Havoc, pun intended, that's the name of another mutant that I hope to see in the future. But anyway, what did you think about the Storm scene? Because Storm takes a dramatic turn in this episode.
I was devastated. I was really upset. I was really upset. I was thinking, I was like, so my whole pull to X-Men was Storm. Like, if you wanted me to watch any X-Men, just put Storm at the beginning of it. And I was thinking, okay, so we get to the second episode and we get ready to take Storm's powers. To me, one of the pivotal characters in the X-Men crew. Like, if you're gonna put the X-Men crew together, the way she busts out first, the way she can, the way her manipulation of weather and her power, I think is really, in my opinion, a force for the team. So you're definitely missing like a critical part of the team to take her out. I mean, now you could say other things, being that she's one of the Black X-Men characters, but I see, you know what I mean? So I'm gonna see, like, it's gonna be interesting to see how people's opinions unfold on this one, because I thought it was a very bold move. I see the manipulation in doing it as far as Magneto's behavior, because that was a huge test for him. Because we talked about how he's always going to have a mutant's back, right? He never likes to see them down, and that's always his breaking point. If he sees a mutant in pain, hurting, that's always his breaking point as to like what decision is Magneto going to make. Like in my time, and when he made a decision, he did make, as far as like, uplifting the officials to take him out. And as a viewer, you're like, well, yeah, let's go. Because you're pissed. You're like, okay, Storm doesn't have powers right now. You're pissed about the situation. So I think all of that kind of heightens, the cliffhanger, as Jamie says, that you get to. It all kind of heightens that intensity of the episode. Because you kind of go a little low-key. It's about, okay, can we prove Magneto is good? But as soon as you see that moment with Storm, something about the whole episode, I think, shifts. Which I gotta give it up to the team, is a good creative decision, because it's definitely gonna get your reaction. It's definitely gonna get a reaction. But as a fan now, as a fan, I was pissed.
I'm pretty sure that we'll see Storm coming back. This was a very dramatic exit for her, and she's got some issues that's going on that we quite don't know about yet that obviously is going to get unpacked as the episodes progress. But I'm not upset because I know that Storm is a very important part of the team, and she has to come back. Like it's stupid that she wouldn't come back for multiple episodes. So I'm just curious to know what's bugging her. What's going on in that mind of yours? And I don't have the memory to remember what happened in the animated series to connect the dots. But I look forward to seeing, how it unfolds in this X-Men 97. Who knows? Maybe they might make some changes. So
Yeah, true,
then,
true.
as we wrap up episode two, we find out all of the mutants are gathered in the mansion, And then someone knocks at the door, and Worf answers. And the woman that's there is Jean Grey. But wait, Jean Grey's already there in the mansion with the other X-Men, holding her newborn baby. What? Who is this woman that looks like Jean Grey? So that's the cliffhanger of at the end of the episode too, is that there's two Jean Greys.
Yeah.
What was that about?
I don't know. I was seeing double. Listen, I was already mad, y'all. Okay. They took Soren's power, then they're gonna give me two Jean Grey. So I was just, let me tell you, it was just like an emotional roller coaster for me in the second episode. I didn't know. I was like, what is going on? Like, we know we can't take out Storm. So my girl, she'll be back. Jamie's right. She's right. They got a plan.
Yeah.
But when I saw the two Jeans, I was like, no way. You know, because we know Jean's power is always on a scale you can't measure, right? So I'm like, is she duplicating clones? What is going on? Like, who is the person who's been in the house this whole time? Am I watching the right episode? It was just so many questions.
I have to correct myself. It was Scott that was holding their child, not Jean. But yeah, well, we know from movies that there's like the Dark Phoenix. And
Gotta love the Dark
you know,
Phoenix,
there's the
I think.
dark Jean Grey. So yeah, we may see a different iteration of Jean Grey in the future episodes. So we'll see how all of that pans out. But for now, I absolutely love these first two episodes. They were lit, they were awesome. It was everything I expected, and even a little bit more. And I'm here for the drama. I'm here for the love
Oh yeah,
triangles.
100%. Yep.
You know, I'm here for the flirting that may brew into something more between Jubilee and Roberto.
Yeah.
You know, and oh, we haven't even talked about Beast. By the way, Beast is still the same. I love it. I love he's
Love
still
Beast.
the same. So Beast is, as always, amazing. The intellectual, making Mark Twain quotes, like
Listening to Mozart, gotta love him.
but yeah, he's always on top of it with his IQ game, and I love it. So
Yeah,
yeah,
he was a
did
good
we miss?
addition. I appreciate him.
Yeah, I forgot to talk about him, but was there any other X-Men that we have left out? I just want to make sure we've talked about everybody. I think.
Yeah, I think Beast was the only one. Oh, well, Nightcrawler. I don't think he was in this one though, was he?
No,
That's all I can say.
he
Yeah.
doesn't. He doesn't
Yeah,
show up.
Night.
But
Yeah.
my fingers are crossed.
Yeah.
We get some Kurt Wagner up in here, because that next to
Yes.
Gambit, next to Gambit. That was another
That
crush
would
of
be
mine.
the only one you're
The second
missing,
column.
but Beast was the main one. That'll be the only X-Men I guess you're missing that would be counted as one of the mains, but yeah, you got to put Beast in there.
Oh, you talking about for Beast for main for what?
Oh, just as like I guess one of your main, I guess Nightcrawler is considered the main too, but he's not like a, I guess over Beast, one of the main
Oh
like
no,
X-Men they put in there.
I'm talking about crushes.
Oh, you're talking about, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Continue with
yeah.
your crush. Continue with your crush.
I'm yeah, no, I'm saying next to Gambit, Nightcrawler was like my cartoon crush and comic book crush. Actually, quick story, I knew about Nightcrawler before the animated series, because I started reading the books, the Excalibur books, and he's a member of Excalibur. And there was also a love triangle with him too. He had a thing for Megan, and Megan was with Captain Britain. And so he was in, like he was in the friend zone, just like Wolverine is with Jean Grey and Cyclops. So anyway, yeah,
But
that was
okay, so now you're in a love triangle with Gambit and Nightcrawler. I like
so now I am, yes, I'm in the friend zone.
it.
So yeah, so that wraps up these first two episodes of X-Men 97. Thanks for listening and geeking out with us. Hopefully you were able to conjure up some memories from your past as well as you watch these two episodes. And stay tuned, because we will be doing these recaps every week, and you know, we're gonna try.
Yep.
I'll say that. We'll try. And just do exactly what we're doing, is just kind of rehashing old memories and talking about some of the moments that stick with us the most.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
The Black Girl Nerds podcast is produced by Jamie Broadnax. The opening theme song to our show is written and performed by Samus. Various instrumentals are performed by Samus, Sky Blue, and Shubzilla. You can find various episodes of the Black Girl Nerds podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Audioboom, Google Play Music, and Spotify.